Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo, and today we're going to be talking about a subject that all of us, well, we hear rhetoric on just about on a daily basis. But my guest today is going to be addressing something that's quite an interesting perspective relative to a common awareness, and that is dealing with oil. And the title of his book is called Peak of the Devil. Chip Haynes is my guest. He's located in Clearwater, Florida. I want to welcome you to this show, Chip.
Thank you, Donna. Great to be here.
Well, I found it most interesting when I was going through your book that your background, I mean, you've done a lot of writing. You have communicated on bicycling because you're an artist, you're a writer, you love juggling, you're a cyclist living in Clearwater, Florida. You have also done some writing, again, on bicycling, global resources, but you really have a passion about the oil industry.
I ended up doing a lot of writing over the last 15, 20 years, and it's been a tremendous amount of fun. No matter what the subject, and of course, Peak of the Devil, the subject is quite dark. But I do enjoy putting words together. It's a lot of fun.
Well, I really like something that you said right at the very beginning of your book. You said people want you, whenever you're speaking about this, they automatically seem to go into the mindset. They want to blame the oil company, the government, and you say, wait a minute, there's equal responsibility. We all have to take a real good look at how we're contributing to this and where our positions of responsibility are. Let me ask you a personal question.
Yes,
it's so easy to get caught up in stuff that's put out by the media. Why is it that this affected you in such a way that you really wanted to write this book, Peak of the Devil? And where does the term Peak of the Devil come from?
Well, let's take those in order. I stumbled on the subject of peak oil by accident because of my background in bicycling. I decided I would look up to see if there were any car-free communities in North America, places where they said, let's see if we can get by without the car. Let's see if we can make a community for pedestrians and cyclists. And I went to look that up. Sadly, there really aren't any. Mackinac Island is about as close as it gets, and that's more of a tourist destination than a livable community. But in my search, I kept seeing references to peak oil, peak oil, peak oil. Like, what? What is this? I started reading about that, and I was stunned on two fronts. One, it's an astounding subject. It's just mind-boggling. When you start to read about it, you think, oh my gosh, this is exceptionally serious. And then the little voice in your head goes, yeah, well, if it's that serious, why haven't you heard anything about it yet? It's been pretty much back-burnered by the mainstream media, and you don't hear a lot about it on Fox News or NBC or whatever, because the event is so slow. It's not really news. I equate it to a glacier going over a town. Yes, it's horrific. Yes, it's going to happen. But the darn thing's only moving an inch a year. Very tough for that to be news.
That's very true.
What was the second half of that question, by the way?
Where did you get the title for your book, The Devil?
I held a contest.
I actually had
the book pretty much written. And I didn't like it. I had a very long, cumbersome title, and I didn't like it. And I went on to an oil forum on the web, and everybody knew me there. And I said, look, I've written this book. The publisher says green-lighted the book, but I hate the title. I'll tell you what. I will pay you a signed first-edition copy of this book if your suggestion for the title wins, mm-hmm. within 90 minutes, a gentleman in Honolulu, Hawaii, came up with Peak of the Devil. And I thought, well, that's it. The contest is over. It's wonderful because oil is such a devil of a commodity for us. We love it and we hate it at the same time. Mm-hmm. We're addicted to it. It completes our lives. It does so much for us. And yet, if only we could get by without it. So Peak of the Devil mm-hmm. won the contest. I did send the gentleman a signed edition, not just the first edition, but a very limited one of one of 50 pre-production editions. So he was happy, I was happy, and everybody loves the title.
Mm-hmm. I will say, to me, when I saw the title, I thought, well, this is very intriguing, because depending on your paradigm of thought, you get all kinds of images. But you bring up some very interesting questions, and your points of information regarding oil, I think, are very significant. When people think of oil, they automatically associate it with automobiles.
Yes.
They automatically associate it with big industry.
Oh,
and
yeah.
that's very viable. However, what they don't realize is that we have millions of products that we use every single day, including medicinal applications,
yes.
that this has enabled us to lead a better life. So
all of the components
are so important, and you bring that out in your book.
I try. The one thing that really perked my ears right up when I started reading about peak oil myself was how vital oil is, petroleum and products, mm-hmm. in agriculture.
Mm-hmm.
It provides insecticides, herbicides, fungicides, fertilizer. It runs the irrigation pumps. It runs the equipment to harvest, and it most certainly runs the trucks that bring the food to your supermarket.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you take away the oil, and you're going to see a drop in per-acre crop yield, and that is going to be a serious problem.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not next year, but some years into the future. Being able to feed everybody without so much oil is going to be tough.
And that's where inventiveness has to come in. That is where people... It's very hard, dependent on your position in life and really what your education and exposure to different arenas is. Because if you are living in a little cubicle of thought and you're not aware of the phenomenal infrastructure
mm-hmm.
that affects us and how, let's just take the United States. We have a tremendous amount of import that comes into this country. I mean, I go to the grocery store last night. I buy plums that are from Chile. I am buying fruit because this is not the natural cycle in this part of
the country. Oh, absolutely. I imagine it's fairly cool where you are right now.
That's right.
I'm being polite.
That's very nice.
If you look at the population centers in North America, so many of them are so far north,
mm-hmm.
how do you feed millions upon millions of people, hundreds of millions of people, in the winter? Well, you truck it in from the southern part of North America. You truck it in from South America, Central America. All this stuff has to be moved every day in quantities to feed, 200 million people when you take in the northern mm-hmm. half of the U.S. and all of Canada?
And that's just here in the United States. We're just
that's
talking about the
plums.
Yeah. So without that infrastructure.
It's critical.
Right. And that's something that unless people have studied history, it wasn't all that long ago. Until the 50s, that we started developing the freeway
mm-hmm.
system. And then that is when there was a great deal of expansion in this nation because people then had the opportunity, with the invention of the automobile, to be mobile. Most people
did not
go further than 75 miles, if that, away from home, because horse and buggy... My goodness, you had to be aware of making sure you had food for the horse, and you had to make sure your buggy was operational, and the buggy did have to have some kind of lubricant or oil for its wheels and its parts. So you have
somebody
all
just
of these
pointed
things.
Out to me the classic as I call it, the trip of biblical proportion. Mary and Joseph going to Bethlehem.
Mm-hmm.
That was an 8-mile trip.
Mm-hmm.
That was a huge trip.
Mm-hmm.
2,000 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
8 miles.
And often that took
deal.
All day.
Mm-hmm. That made
took
the book.
All day. Yeah, that is absolutely the truth. Now we look at so many things, and you address the issues of the rigs. We have these massive oil spills that occur, and that brings people attention to it. And it's very easy to, you know, just focus on that without understanding that the reason that we have these humongous barges, because it's cost-effective to be able to take a vessel of that size, move it from point A to point B.
Right.
And they are saying, we'll take the risk, because the risk is worth it without this. China needs it. I mean, I don't know of any nation in the world that doesn't need it to get it from point A to point B or wherever we're going. And so it's really tough unless people become innovative and say, all right, how can we make it different? What can we do? Now, when you were researching this, I'm sure you found all kinds of different things, like using corn and there's other components. But when you were doing this, what are some of the most significant areas of information that just blew your mind?
Say again, please.
What were the most significant points of information that just absolutely blew your mind?
Well, the fact that the peak of oil discoveries, not production, but discoveries of oil, peaked in the 1960s worldwide.
Hmm.
We have not found as much oil in the last, well, now 50 years, as we did in the first half of the 1960s. So we are living on borrowed oil. We are living on oil we discovered 50 years ago. That's fairly frightening.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody else, a mathematician, pointed out what they call the rule of 70 and the doubling of sets, about how you can figure out how long it takes to double your use of an item. And with oil, the use doubles about 17 and a half years. And every time you double the use, you use more than you did in the previous doublings combined. And the whole point of peak oil is the moment where you have used half of all you will ever use. So if you go by this mathematician's theory, when we reach the midpoint of all we will ever use, we will be pretty much out in 17 and a half years. That's frightening. Not low, out. That's scary. Now, it doesn't actually work out like that. It doesn't. You can't keep using more and more when you have less and less. Mathematically, it looks terrifying. So there's things I've run across like that are just astounding, and you have to put it in perspective, and you have to understand why it might not be quite as bad as you think it's going to be, but it's not going to be a garden party.
You talk about the U.S. gets most of its imported oil from, and this is in order, Canada, Saudi Arabia, Mexico, Nigeria, and Venezuela.
Mm-hmm.
And we have, to this date, been, I think, the leader in the use of oil. We have utilized some of our resources in the United States. Alaska is rich with a lot of oil depositories, but it's very expensive to develop up there because you have weather conditions that are pretty
right.
rugged. But what we've got now that's occurring, the Chinese economy, for the first time in a long while, has been gradually building and building and building, and the Chinese people are saying, hey, we've got a nice middle class now that's come back after
right.
so many years of not even having
one. They're motorized.
Yes, they are, and they're saying, we like mobility. They like it. I don't know of anybody in any part of the world that doesn't want mobility, and that is what the automobile typically has represented. So now
it's a very easy addiction.
Easily, and now it's going to go way, way, way beyond.
Well, if you look at the Chinese, they have, 1.3 billion people, something like
mm-hmm.
that, 1.5 billion. We
mm-hmm.
only have 300 million. So if
mm-hmm.
they gave, if they really worked hard at boosting their westernization, that would seriously ramp up oil use to the point that we would just fall off a cliff at some point in the future. It's going to be terrifying. And plus, you throw in India, same situation.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a billion people that want to drive.
Mm-hmm.
I can't fault them for that.
Heaven's
I can't no. blame them for that. But in the case of the Chinese, I do honestly wonder what they're up to, and if they know what they're up to, and it's a calculated risk on their part to absorb those natural resources faster than they really would have normally for the sake of crashing the West.
Mm-hmm.
I can't help but wonder that.
Mm-hmm. Well,
I don't know.
It's not just there. You look at South America as
right.
it's developing, Brazil especially, and other areas of South America. Once the internet is introduced, I mean, I interviewed a woman 2 weeks ago that was in Honduras recently, and now these people in these remote villages are discovering cell phones. They have capacity for computer service,
mm-hmm.
and this is due to satellites. You have mm-hmm. all of these things, and people are connecting with other people in mobility when you think
mm-hmm.
of flying
yes.
from country
oh, yes.
to country.
And it all takes energy.
It all
and
takes
more often
energy.
Than not, that energy comes from oil. And
mm-hmm.
we just keep accelerating that use. And I say we, I mean globally.
Yes.
Even if Americans, we are notorious energy users, even if we were to suddenly see the light and all start riding bicycles tomorrow, it probably wouldn't matter. Because there's the 7 billion people on Earth. We are 5% of that. We can't stop the train on our own.
Mm-hmm.
So,
no, and this is something where I think it's really a prime opportunity for innovation to look at
okay.
various aspects. What can we do? What is it? Energy always is. It's always there. Electricity has always been here until we learned how to harness it. So it's how do we or what can we do for the innovative capacity to be open and receptive to let's look at different alternatives. And I know we have the solar and we have the wind and
mm-hmm.
we have, you know, the ocean and this type of
oh,
thing.
Yeah, you have geothermal, you have the hydroelectric.
But you still need oil for all of these components.
Well, everybody talks about the alternatives, Donna, and
mm-hmm.
you've mentioned most of them.
Mm-hmm.
All of them together in a perfect harmony, perfect world, might, and I am being just wildly optimistic here, might replace about 50% of what oil does.
Mm-hmm.
It comes down to you really need to understand, as an individual, you need to understand how much energy, not only do you use, but how much energy is used on your behalf, which is the same thing. If
mm-hmm.
I do nothing but ride my bicycle, I could go, oh, I don't use any oil. No, 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 no. Oil is used on your behalf. It generates the power in your home. It brings all the food to the grocery store, so it's close enough that you can ride your bike to go get that food, but oil got it to you.
And also you have
so
to use
many,
oil.
So many things,
mm-hmm.
so many hidden things that are done for you on
and
a
you
daily
need the
basis
oil.
Using oil.
Yeah, that's right, but you need the oil also to lubricate the gears on your bicycle.
Well, oil built the bicycle.
That's right.
And if you, I had somebody say, well, bicycles are oil-free. Well, they are oil-free. If you take off the tires, the tubes, the rim strips, the hand grip, the seat, the cable housing, I could go on. There wouldn't be
no bicycle,
left.
Folks. You walk.
Mm-hmm.
I said, no bicycle. You walk.
Yep, you walk. Wait. No, your shoes are plastic for the most part. That's oil.
That's right. That's
yeah.
right.
And see, that's people with plastic. Well, where does plastic?
Mm-hmm.
We don't get plastic from a plastic tree.
Mm-hmm.
We might get spaghetti from a spaghetti tree. But the plastics are all derived from the heavier components of oil.
Mm-hmm.
And you take plastics out of a home or out of an office or a radio studio,
mm-hmm.
and I'm betting there isn't a whole lot left.
That's right. That is
and
right.
And that's going to be a real eye-opener. I'd say a real shock, but that takes electricity, and that would require oil to power it. So.
Well, I like some of the humor in your book, and I'm going to share this one little story that you have in here that I just really thought was cute as it could be. You said, some time ago, I read about some kids that had a car powered by a hamster wheel. The hamster turned the wheel that ran a little generator that powered up a battery that drove the car. It worked wonderfully, but they had to wait 3-4 hours to get enough power to drive the car in one little circle just to show that it worked. Then the hamster went on strike. Yes, the idea worked, folks.
I actually saw this. It was like a news of the weird kind of thing, and I saw this video, this clip on the news about these two young kids. I mean, they must have been like elementary school, and they built this ultralight car, I guess, called vehicle, and there was a hamster inside on a wheel, and it was connected to a generator that was connected to the battery, and the hamster had to run for days for them to go do a circle in front of the news cameras. Yes, you can do it. It's just not real practical.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I made my whole point about weasel spit. If you could use weasel spit, well, now you're going to have massive weasel farms and the people to harvest it. Sometimes it just doesn't scale up. The United States uses something like 20 million barrels of oil a day. That's a lot of hamsters. And from
well,
what I understand,
just maybe we could use weasels.
Like chicken.
Well, I think that the human being has the capacity for being so innovative. Now, one of the things that you also address, you have 100 different points in your book, scattered through with tidbits of humor. But when I'm looking at this, you talk about the population. And we have had explosions of population in India and China and so many different parts of the world. We have, in our known period of time, more people on this planet to feed, to clothe, to employ, to, you know, it's just absolutely astronomical, the numbers and the amount of population that is evolving and the predictions for this, we have got some big, big challenges. And usually, historically, it has been shown that whether it's done through an upset of Mother Nature's attitudes and actions that causes the demise of people or a massive war or something like this, populations of human beings, when they have abundant food, when they have the capacity to produce, they just do it like lemmings until something occurs, like a plague again, or again something with Mother Nature, that just all of a sudden reduces the population. We are in this explosive pattern.
You have found the ugly part. As I point out in my book, we're going to need more shovels. My optimistic side tells you that we can reduce the birth rate in 9 months. However, and in times of stress, birth rates do drop.
Mm-hmm.
But, yes, you have hit what is going to be...
Are you still there? Oh, we lost Chip. He just disappeared. I don't know where he went. So something happened to his connection, and I don't know what's going on, but maybe my engineer can catch up with him. By the way, for those of you listening, we are talking with Chip Haynes. Something happened to our telephone connection. His book is Peak of the Devil, and it's 100 questions and answers about peak oil. And Doug, can you check to see what happened to Chip and... I hope his phone line is okay. I'm waiting for my engineer to respond. He could be on the other phone line. Anyway, one of the many points are brought out.
We actually don't have him with us right now.
Absolutely, I think a different perspective of viewing what is going on, the things that can happen that we need to be aware of. And again, I think innovation with people and conditions and situations that we can think through, I believe we are going to have an absolutely phenomenal 15, 20 years ahead of us. Oil is not going to disappear. It is not going to be going away. And Chip's book does not bring out information in a negative patterning that will cause, you know, distress or anxiety. What he's trying to do is bring forth some thoughts that enable you as an individual to take a positioning of thoughtfulness. It doesn't mean you're going to give up everything. That's not a requirement. What it is going to take is, how can we do something differently that is going to put into a useful perspective an advantage so that we will need oil less? Now, I want to share a couple of points with you that I learned about just recently. And I would say one, which is about different parts of the United States, not in the United States, but around the globe, where they are astonished at how there seems to be a production of oil and they cannot understand where it's coming from. All right. Something happened. I don't know. His telephone line, we've not been able to get him back, so something disconnected him. I don't know what it is. But let me finish my thought here. I wanted to tell you that there are areas on the earth, and they haven't figured out what's going on, where oil, even though it has been used, they're finding that it's filling back up. So it could be there is an underground source that is going into the vacuum of open space and filling it that way. But also, there is a Japanese man, and I was sent a video by someone saying, Donna, I think you'd be interested in this. And it was about a Japanese man who decided, because Japan has so many people there, I don't know their exact number of population, but he has invented some equipment that takes plastics and reduces them back into the natural state. He has done this so efficiently and effectively. Ah, Chip.
Hello, again.
Yes, there we go. Something happened to your phone line. I was sharing with my audience, because I knew we were going to be able to get you back on, that there is a factor. Oil is not going to totally disappear. But there's a Japanese man, and a video was sent to me about his discovery, where he was able to take plastics, all the plastics that come into your home, and he has a equipment, it's a portable unit, where you could take your plastics, put it in this unit, and he showed it on film, and it really works. He will reduce the plastics back into oil.
And that is called thermal depolymerization. And
there
I would love to go back in time, find the inventor, and say, yes, it's a great idea, but can you give it a name that's easier to say?
Oh, my God. I like that idea.
They're Changing World Technologies, mm-hmm, up in the Northeast U.S. is using that process. My understanding is they can convert any, how do they put it, carbon-based feedstock into oil, and it works, yes. They can't convert nuclear waste. That's the only thing they haven't been able, mm-hmm, to do. And it's very, very Rumpelstiltskin, but it works. They convert about anything. And human sewage, instead of being pumped out into the out into the world, could be converted to oil.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
It's a wonderful,
absolutely,
idea. I'm really hoping that is the one thing that is going to be the shining light for us in the years ahead.
Well, I think it is a shining light, because firmly believe in the innovation capacities of the human mind. And I think, in fact, I've known of people who were 20 or 30 years ahead of the curve and were well aware of how to use sewage and convert it so that it is absolutely effective, a closed-loop system where there's water purification and everything else. The challenge is that the establishments that are in place, and this is nothing new, this has happened over and over again, once you've gotten the technology established to be able to move up the latter into something else without upsetting the economic balance of perhaps the behemoths that were, it's very unsettling. It happened at the, you know, at the beginning of the 1900s when we went into utilizing energy, electricity much more efficiently and effectively. Automobiles came into play, so a lot of industries died. Now, with technology, it's moving forward at such a speed, we're finding many industries do not know how to do the adaptation within the time frames of short space that are required. So it's quite interesting to go through this. Chip, when you did this book, I know you wanted to educate people. And as I'm going through your material and I look at all of my yellow highlighting, there are people that would be doomsdayers that are going to say, well, the year 2012, which I'm not of this mind, the year 2012 is an indicator that we're all going to go back to the cave days. I don't want those, thank you very much. I like my washing machine.
I'm with you on that.
I don't want to be doing that pounding
my, cave. My standing joke is the Mayans just ran out of paper.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they did the calendar up to 2012 and went, I am so tired of doing calendars. And there's no particular reason. That's just where they stopped. I joke that if we're really lucky, the end of the 21st century will look like about the start of the 20th, if we're lucky. Mm-hmm. You know, that we'll go back to a slightly less insane time, that things will be a more, they'll be calmer, they'll be slower, that we won't have to travel so far, we won't feel obligated to run at such a crazy pace. I think that would be wonderful. You mentioned the Industrial Revolution era around the 1900s. I'm a huge fan of steampunk. I think that's way cool stuff. I could wear that stuff. I would like to see us work harder toward achieving that, but I know realistically that everybody's going to be dragged kicking and screaming into it, that we're not going to, very few people will embrace a lower energy lifestyle before they have to.
Well, and it may not be necessary. If those people that have the innovative capacity
right,
to understand
exactly.
that we incorporate different forms of energy in a cost-effective, economical application, it's one thing to be able to do something on a big scale.
I'm just afraid right now I'm not seeing it being brought online, so to speak, no pun intended, as quickly as I would want to see it being done. And I understand that from one point of view. We still do have a tremendous amount of oil. So there's very little practical incentive to streamline the process, to really speed up the adaptation process with alternative energies when oil is still king. Oil is still the number one cheap, most adaptable way.
That's
and we've
true.
Still
now-
got a bunch of it.
Chip, we're out of
time. We will not start the change soon enough.
Right. Now, Chip, we are out of time, so I'm going to ask, what's your website quickly so my audience will be able to check you out?
The website is www.peakofthedevil.com.
Peakofthedevil.com.
Peak of the Devil, and I got to thank that guy in Hawaii for the coolest title ever.
Well, that's marvelous. Chip, it's been a delight having you as a guest.
Thank you, Donna. You know that.
Yes, sir. It's a joy, and when you come out with your next book, be sure you let me know.
I will. Thank you.
You're welcome, Chip. This is Donna Sebo. Chip Haynes has been my guest. Go to his website, peakofthedevil.com, P-E-A-K of the devil.com, and I think you'll find it very interesting. His book gives you a lot to mentally chew on. A lot of good information. We'll be back in just a moment. Don't go away.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Hi, this is Rio. I'm the author of the cutting-edge book, Hooked on Raw. I want to give you and your loved ones the gift of optimum health. So when you order my book, Hooked on Raw, which has over 350 delicious, healthy recipes, I'll include my new DVD, What's Not Cooking in Rio's Kitchen, for a half price. Just go to my website, rawfoodinfo.com, and click on Holiday Special. That's rawfoodinfo.com. Click on Holiday Special.
Hello, this is Donna Sebo. So delighted that you are with me. And I have some fun things to share with you today. Possibly even, how about a glazed sweet sour spare rib recipe? We love spare ribs at the Sebo household. And I'm always interested in looking up for something that maybe gives a little bit of a taste twist there. And by the way, if you want to call in and chat with me, telephone lines are now open. Give me a buzz at 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. I wanted to share a thought with you, especially after having the conversation with Chip, and I have, again, a tremendous amount of faith in the ingenuity of the human being. And I came across a quote by Robert Johnson, and I really liked it, and I thought, I'd like to share this with you today because I think it's significant. This is what he said. Measure yourself by your best moments, not by your worst. We are too prone to judge ourselves by our moments of despondency and depression. We have all felt the desire, at times almost a victorious desire, to get away from everything and to retire into a cottage in the wilderness. But if we don't do it, because we are better men and women than we think we are. One of the components of a successful individual is recognizing you're going to have what we women like to call bad hair days. You're going to have them. You're going to be times you get up and you look in the mirror and you just say, God, you must have been kidding. Well, am I one of your jokes? I mean, really? Have you ever had mornings like that? I have. Sometimes I've had afternoons like that or evenings like that. It's life. But when you give yourself a chance and you don't run, maybe you have a little bit of a quiet retreat. Maybe you take a walk around the block. Do something like that. Whatever it is that works for you, could be going out and building a fence, chopping wood, talking to your dog or your cat or your hamster, whatever, doesn't make any difference. You need to have the understanding that you are always doing your life going to be in some kind of an experience, a learning curve of one type or another. I can remember when I was working at one point in my life for an insurance company. And I was in an office environment where I swear most of the people in the office had mental attitudes the size of a postage stamp. And I would just sit there and I would be astonished at the conversations. I was astonished at how oppressive the environment was. I found the only way that I could really deal with it was to go out on my lunch hour or to be by myself in some way. So fortunately, at that time, I was working in Southern California, and I had the most beautiful environment. It was just right on San Vicente Boulevard, and I would go for a walk. And I can remember looking up at the mountains that would be on the horizon, if you will, of the city. And I'd look at those mountains, and I'd say to myself, by golly, if you could stand to put up with all this garbage that's been going along and dealing with the environment of human beings for all this time, I guess I can hang in tough, too. Now, you may think that's a little dingy, but for some reason, mountains have always represented tremendous strength to me. That's just my perspective. So I'd be gone on my lunch hour for an hour, and I would come back into the environment, and I was refreshed. But I found that if I didn't do that, that was around me, I felt was suffocating, because I was not of the disposition of the thought patternings that these people in general around me had. And I thought, you know, this is not going to be a permanent position for me. I cannot stay in this for a lifetime. Sure enough, I didn't. But I learned some things while I was there. And I'm very grateful for those lessons. And maybe you're in a situation, you're in an environment where you feel like you're suffocating and you think, if I hear one more complaint from Toady the Toad, I am absolutely just going to explode. Don't explode. Recognize that this is the moment you're in. What are you going to do with that moment? You don't want to run from it, but you want to recognize that you have dominion over your mind, over your attitudes, and over your response patterns. So when you can take that positioning, and you can look forward and say, and this too shall pass. A very good friend taught me that many years ago. Doesn't mean you deny responsibility, and it doesn't mean you deny the accountability for other people, their actions and what they do and how they respond and how they handle their space. But you have options. You have choices, and you can make them. And it doesn't have to hurt anybody. It just means you can move on and beyond. But it's up to you. There's no free lunches in life. You're going to have to earn your space through how you handle your experiences. And I don't care what age you are. This is just the way life is. It is something that I think Robert Johnson made a very good point about. When you don't run from situations, when you look at them in the eye, maybe you need to take a respite for a while, take a nap, do something, that's okay. But you don't run. You don't hide. You turn around and you face it and you move on. It really makes a difference. It empowers you as an individual. So I wanted to share that with you because I thought it was just so important as a complement to what it is that we were sort of talking about. You know, it's so easy to talk about, oh, this is bad, and the world's just going to, you know, we're in a handbasket, and we'll go on and on and on and on and on. And by the time you get finished with that, you'll think you're in the dark ages, but we're not. And we don't want to be. And you don't want to be locked into that kind of thinking. You want to realize that there are choices. And you know what? That's one of the things that America has always given an opportunity for. There are many places on this planet that you cannot speak your mind. You'll be put to death. You'll sometimes be disfigured. You know, there's just all kinds of things that can happen to you. So we're fortunate, so we have to protect that right and that freedom, because that is what enables innovation, creativity, and allows us to move forward instead of backwards. This is Donna Siebel. I want to also let you know 888-815-9756 is your number to call into. Tomorrow, we're going to be talking with Deanna Minnick. We're going to be talking about quantum healing. Now, what Deanna does, and it's so very, very nice, is that we're going to be talking about different modalities and how you can integrate them, utilize them for your own better health. We live in a very exciting era, and that is because we have exposure to all of these different things, whether it's Chinese medicine, East Indian medicine, you know, Western medicine, South American medicine. We've got all of these wonderful things that we have an opportunity of becoming educated about and perhaps finding a way to utilizing. And that is what medicine is evolving into. Instead of having these isolated little belief systems, we're seeing how we can bring them together and recognizing they all have a value. And I think it's very exciting. I was talking with a woman who is from South America this morning, and we were talking about the very things, the very issues that we're dealing with in the United States with water contamination and some other things. She talks about this in remote areas of South America that they never thought they would have to deal with. They're dealing with them today from the very way that they are living in their own environment. So when you have communication about, gee, you can do this, you can do that, you can do the other, it's wonderful. It opens up the benefits for everyone. So we do live in exciting times, but it's going to be up to us to decide on how we are going to put good things into practice to make this world a better place. Donna Sebo here. We're taking a break. If you wanted to give me a buzz, 888-815-9756. We'll be back in just a moment.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Hi, this is Rio, host of the Hooked on Raw radio show on rawenergyradio.com. If you're interested in the raw and living food lifestyle, along with the real story of what's happening to our health freedoms, and you don't mind a little controversy, listen to my radio show and podcasts on rawenergyradio.com. Each week, we interview guests and cover topics you won't hear on mainstream radio. Get informed, healthy, and involved. rawenergyradio.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Now, I'm going to share this recipe for sweet and sour spare ribs, but before I do that, I want to share a true story about Carl Jung. Now, some of you may not be aware of him, but he was a marvelous psychologist. He had been a protege of Sigmund Freud, but he was a little bit smarter than Freud because he didn't get all stuck on one ideology, nor did he become a cocaine addict. So he was the one that really went up against Freud, disagreeing with a lot of the things that he said. But he was a man that, when you read his writings, was very open in sharing his experiences of the paranormal and coming into the understanding of the deeper self, the soul self, and the intuitive capacities of the human being. Well, this was one of his experiences. He had been giving lectures, and one evening after he came back from one of his presentations, he was in bed, but he just couldn't go to sleep. And about 2 o'clock in the morning, he had just dozed off when he was awakened. And he was aware that someone had come into his room. He thought that the door to his room had been opened. He turned on his light, his bedside light. Nobody was there. The room, very quiet, very still. It's 2 o'clock in the morning, for heaven's sakes. It was such a strong feeling that he got up out of bed, opened the door to check the corridor outside of his bedroom, but it was still as it could be, the very way it would be at 2 a.m. in the morning. Now, he tried, when he went back to bed, he was trying to recall exactly what went on. What caused him to have this awareness of this person coming into his room? He said there was a sense of urgency, and all of a sudden, it occurred to him that he had been awakened by a sense of a dull pain in his head. He said it was as if something had struck him in the forehead and then in the back of the skull, the back of his head. The very next day, Carl Jung received a telegram telling him that one of his patients had committed suicide. The man had shot himself in the head, the bullet had gone through his forehead, and came to rest in the back wall of his skull. Yes. Recorded by Carl Jung. Things happen that absolutely amaze science fellows because you can't reproduce this. This is something that happens in a moment. I've had a number of experiences like this, and I bet you have too, or you've known of people that have had them. Once you've had the experience, you never forget it. This is something that occurred. He actually had that telepathic connection with the patient, and he very well may have been in that patient's mind. And when that patient passed over, he visited Carl Jung in the only way he knew how, with the impression of exactly what had happened to him. Fascinating story. Okay, let's go on to glazed sweet sour spare ribs. Oh, they are so good. They're just wonderful. Now, you can fix these right on top of the stove, and what you need is about 6 pounds of spare ribs, and you want to divide them into 2 or 3 inch rib pieces. You want to have that because it makes it easier for serving. Then you're going to need about a teaspoon of salt. You're going to need 3/4 cup plus 2 tablespoons of cider vinegar, apple cider vinegar. And then you're going to need a half a cup of unsalted butter, 1/3 cup of packed light brown sugar, 2 tablespoons of balsamic vinegar, 2 tablespoons of soy sauce, 2 tablespoons of soy sauce, 1 tablespoon of ketchup, 3/4 teaspoon of pepper, and 1/4 to 1/2 teaspoon of cayenne, or to taste. I usually use a little more than that because I like mine spicy, but it's all up to you as to what you want to do. Now, this is how simple it is. Not a whole bunch of ingredients, but this is simple. Now, what you want to do, you want to take your ribs, and you want to salt, put the salt with enough cold water to cover the ribs by 1.5 inches in a large Dutch oven. And what you do is you bring everything to a boil over medium heat, reduce the heat until the water is just barely simmering. You know, it's got a nice little bubble to the surface. Not boiling, but it's got that nice ripple simmer effect. And you want to simmer it until the ribs are tender. You just want to keep it on there. A crock pot is great for this, for about 1 3/4 to 2 hours. That's what you want to do. You just want to put it in there and you leave it alone. Well, after that, you want to take the remaining ingredients, all of the vinegar, the butter, the sugar, and the soy sauce and everything else, and you want to put them in a pot, and you want to mix them together, and you want to stir them just until your butter melts and the sugar dissolves. Doesn't take you much time. It's just about 3 to 5 minutes at most. You want to taste it, make sure it has the heat that you want, or doesn't want. Adjust it if necessary. Now you want to put that sauce aside once everything tastes just the way it should, and you want to just leave it alone. Once your ribs are finished in the water, the simmering water, you want to take a rack and you want to in your oven, and you want to position about 5 inches from the heat source. You want to preheat your boiler. You take your ribs out of your Dutch oven and put them in a single layer in a large, shallow roasting pan. And you might want to put them on those racks, so that you can, if there's any fat left, you can just let it drip down to the bottom. You arrange them in a single layer in this shallow pan and brush them well with the sauce. And you want to throw out the liquid, the salty water, in the Dutch oven. And then you want to broil your ribs until they're brown, 5 or 6 minutes, and you want to brush them after 3 minutes with sauce. Then you want to remove the ribs from the broiler, turn them over, and brush generously with the sauce again, continuing to brush them, taking them out. You could even do this on a grill if you had a grill. And it's just delicious. When they're brown, they're tender, they're succulent, they're wonderful. We are out of time. This is Donna Sebo. Remember, always you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Tomorrow, we're talking about healing. Hope you can join me. We'll talk to you tomorrow, same time, same place, right here on bbsradio.com. Donna Sebo here. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.